I know that they are honest enough that I know what their issues are. And they have self-awareness. And they are so interested in growing in their faith, in their marriages. And they can admit when they're wrong. And so I am safe with those women. So the world is not divided into like people with issues and people without issues. But people who know they have them, admit they have them, and people who say they don't or pretend they don't. And we're not these, are we? I think already in MOPS, you're like getting an A in this, you know? Like, I came to be my real self. But let's talk about the terms a little bit more carefully. So what does it mean to be honest? Like I said, we all know we want honest friends. No one is looking to be in friends with, in a relationship with a fully dishonest person. But sometimes we don't really think about what honest means. And the first thing is that honest people act truthfully. They act truthfully. We call that being in psychology an integrated person. So you are the same person everywhere you go. Now, everybody has masks, and there are certain intimate details of yourself you wouldn't reveal, say, like in a board meeting or to your dental hygienist. But generally, you are the same person wherever you go. If you run into me in Target, I hope that I'm the same person that you see up here. I hope that I don't have major things that are off. I had a good friend in my years in MOPS, and we were on the serious dating friendship track, if you know what I'm saying. Like, we were on a 2 to 3 week call frequency, you know, for a couple years. Like, we were close friends, I thought. Spent a lot of time together. And then one day, please don't share this story on social media. I showed up at her house unannounced. I was just driving by, I was running errands, and she and her kids were out in the front yard. So I just pulled in to say hi, and I came out and I said, hi. And she came out to the sidewalk and she said, what are you doing here? Like, I was just driving by, I just came to say hi. She said, you can't be here right now. Why? I'm having something delivered. I'm like, is it heroin? I don't understand. She said, well, it was a washer dryer. Maybe there was heroin in it. I don't know. But I showed up and she wasn't prepared for me. So she couldn't have me there. And it wasn't an isolated incident. There was another time we were supposed to go for a walk in the morning. And I had called her house to say, are we cute or are we sweating? Like, what kind of a walk are we taking? Like, am I getting dressed or am I putting on my sneakers? And her husband answered the phone and I said, what's your wife wearing today? He's like, that's a weird question. Like, no. I just, we're going for a walk and I'm wondering, you know. So I show up to meet her and she's furious. I said, what's the matter? My husband didn't know I was meeting you. I didn't tell him. He thinks I'm doing something else, and you got me in trouble. Don't call my house anymore. Just call my cell phone. I'm like, I don't think this is going to work for me. And this sweet girl, she's a sweet girl, but she had a lot of trauma in her past that she hadn't integrated. She had an alcoholic father and just learned to deal with people one at a time. So she needed to get fully in control to spend time with you. And it started to get me into trouble, and that just didn't feel safe to me, and eventually that relationship kind of had to phase out. Honest people speak truthfully. When you ask them a question, what'd you do last night? They can say, I ate 3 Rice Krispie treats and watched 2 hours of The Crown, or whatever it is that they did. I gave up Netflix for Lent, and I'm pining for it, I'll tell you. They don't need to look better than they are. They don't need to tell you something that isn't true. But also, can we ask honest questions without manipulating? Can we just say what we want directly? That's part of being honest. If you invite a friend to your birthday party or to out to dinner for your birthday, do you say, you know, I know you're really busy and I don't really expect you to come and it's fine, it's really not a big deal to me, but if you want to, we're going to be here at this time. Or can you say, I'm having a birthday party and I really want you to come? And then they have the ability to do an honest yes or no. Because the former one might say all those things and then you don't show up and she's mad because she didn't tell the truth about how important it was that you were there. So can we ask honest questions? Honest people also, they're authentic. That's big in our culture, right? The concept of being authentic. But they share their struggles, their silliness, their weaknesses. They can admit, you know, that they don't have it all together. Share their struggles is on your thing. And they avoid keeping secrets from their closest friends. I'm not saying everything that you about you that you're struggling with that you need to lay out on the table today. In fact, that's probably not a safe thing to do because people won't know how to react necessarily and you could end up getting hurt more. What I'm saying is people who walk closely in your life should know what your life really is like. And they should know some of the things that are hard. They should know, for example, what is the central struggle in your marriage? How many of you are married? How many of you basically fight about the same thing every time? There's like one central struggle in your marriage, right? It's about money, or it's about he never helps with the kids, or you never help with the kids. I don't know. There's something central that you fight about. Your best friend should know that. That isn't because she can help you walk through life if she knows that. If you have some serious stuff that happened to you in your past that traumatized you, that affect the way you relate to people, that is a great thing for your best friends to know. You know, I got hurt this way, or I suffered abuse this way, or I, you know, these are the life-shaping things that happened to me. Your best friends should know that stuff. It's helpful for them to know that stuff. If you have, and I know we're in a church, but if there is addiction in your family, either with your parents or your husband, someone is struggling with an addiction to gambling, pornography, alcohol, drugs, it happens everywhere. Do people know that? Because if they don't know you. And if they don't, keeping secrets breaks relationships. Because if you walk very closely with someone for a long time and then reveal the big stuff, it's harder for people to take. Why didn't you trust me with that? We start to think if people don't trust us. Most people can handle your stuff. So we avoid keeping secrets. And that's how we become safe. But so why is it good for us to share our struggles? Because you're thinking like, I don't know if I want to do that. I'm not sure I really want to do that. That seems a little scary. Well, exposing our issues, first of all, it helps us to feel known. Do you want to be known? We want to be known and we want to be loved for who we are. And if we're afraid that people won't love us for who we are, the only way I know to get over that is to show them and see if they run screaming or see if they stay. It allows us to be known and to be loved for who we are. Sharing our struggles also allows us to feel normal. I joined MOPS for the Me Toos. You know what I'm saying? Like, my kids will not put their shoes on. Me too. I haven't slept in 3 years. Me too. You know, I don't know how to juggle nursing and carrying this child. Me too. Your marriage and parenting, hard for everybody. So it's great to share what we're going through because people most of the time will go, yep, me too. I totally know what you're talking about. And then also, it lets us know and helps us feel supported when we aren't normal. What does that mean? My 8th year of MOPS, I'm feeling like I got the baby thing down, kind of. And we have a lot of new moms at my table who are brand new with their first kid. And we have a rule in our MOPS group that we don't give unsolicited advice. So if someone has a problem, we don't give them advice unless they ask for it. Because otherwise, it's like you throw the problem out and it's like chickens on feed, you know, like this is what you should do. But so we had a sweet new mom. She had an 18-month-old, her first child, and she said, ladies, I need advice. I've got a problem. Tell us your problem. We're here. We can't wait to give you advice. We're never allowed to do that. And she says, I cannot get my 18-month-old to sit in the high chair at dinner for longer than 15 minutes, and I don't know what to do. We're all like, you can get your 18-month-old to sit in the high chair for 15 minutes? That's amazing. Call Stanford now. He's a gifted child. Like, so we were able to kind of reflect to her. No, that's not a normal expectation. Like, you are being too hard on yourself. Throw some Cheerios on the floor and talk to your husband. But she'd been like hearing, you know, like reading books about like family dinners and what keeps them out of prison and off drugs, you know? Yeah, when they're older, you don't have to do that yet. So like sometimes have you ever shared something like I'm trying to do something and someone looks at you like, are you crazy? That's too hard. Stop that. So I love that we show ourselves and people kind of like go, no, that's not normal. You don't, that doesn't work. And then also a more serious example. I had a great mom in our leadership team. Her name was Alyssa, and I have permission to share her story, so you may share it on social media. But she had a child who had a lot of tantrums, and she was really struggling with how pervasive they were. And she would share just enough for a while that she would get me too. So we could all affirm, yeah, three-year-olds are rough. You know, if you don't have a three-year-old yet, I'm sorry to tell you, I think it's harder than two. It's tantrums with scientific workability. You know, like they have the intellect to do it on purpose. Okay. So we would, you know, she would get the Me Toos. But then she started to share the full range of her experience where her son was having very violent tantrums, actually had hit the baby. And she started to tell us all the details. And people were able to lean in and go, babe, I think you need to call your pediatrician. That sounds outside the range of what we're experiencing. And maybe you need to find out what's happening. It turned out that her son was on the autism spectrum. And she had been dealt a hand that was slightly harder than many of the women at her table, but what she believed is she was just a worse mother, that she was less patient than the rest of us, when in fact she had a larger challenge. And so that's one of the secrets that we need to share. If our kids have a developmental issue or on an autism spectrum or are dealing with an illness, that's something that we need to tell the truth about, because then people can support us. Alyssa went on to run a support group for moms of children with autism because she said, no one's ever going to feel as alone as I did. I don't ever want anyone to feel as alone as I did. And I just love that she did that. So we want safety. We want relationships. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. So how do we have safe friends? And the first answer is that we have to be safe, truthful friends if we want to have them. I have a little illustration that you can't see from the Betty Crocker cookbook. I'm a good cook, but I can't make cookies. I don't know why. They always come out too flat. And my husband gives me a hard time about it. And then I found in my Betty Crocker cookbook, there was a picture that had a flat cookie and it said, your butter is too soft. That's why you have a flat cookie. And over here, it's like, if your cookie is too round and too hard, you're over measuring the flour. I don't know what that means exactly. But in the middle, it has a cookie and it says, chocolate chip cookies are slightly rounded. There are no problems with this cookie. And my husband are like, this cookie has no issues. There are no problems. This is a cookie with no problems. Here's the thing. You might be able to make a cookie with no problems, but you will not find a woman without them. And you will not be one. So the first thing I want us to do today as we take the step toward safe friendships is step one is admit you have issues to yourself. Yes, not everything I do is art. I can think of some things right now that I'm working on. Step two, admit you have issues to others. Just turn to the person next to you right now, and you can either say, I have issues, or this cookie has problems. Your choice. And I'm done. Okay, have a good day. That's always so dangerous because you might not want to. You just could talk about that now. Step three is that we have to accept that others have issues too. The person next to you, she just told you, this cookie has problems. And then step four, to create long-term relationships with flawed women, stop trying to figure out whose issues are worse. Can I get an amen? Amen. Stop trying to think, well, I may struggle with this, but at least I don't struggle with that. Or I'm the one here that's here to help you. So my model growing up in friendships, my mom is one of six kids. She's the third child, middle child. I watched her listen to all of her siblings' problems and never share hers. What I internalize from that is in every relationship, we have a fixer and a fixie. That's how relationships work. So I would go into every relationship trying to figure out which one am I. Do I have the goods to fix your problem? Or are you here to help me? And that got me into a lot of trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of trouble. But here's what Jesus says about this issue. And I love this. He says, judge not, or you too shall be judged. For the measure of judgment that you use will be measured back to you. He said, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your own eye, or in your brother's eye, and pay no attention to the plank in your eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take that little speck out of your eye, when all the time you have a plank hanging out of your eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll be able to see clearly to see the speck in your brother's eye. I think this is a funny image. From the stage, I imagine all of you with a 2x4 sticking out of your eye, trying to get the eyelash off the girl next to you, and you're hitting each other in the forehead with the plank sticking out of your eye. Now, this does not mean that you are always the one with the bigger problem. That's not possible. But what Jesus is saying and what I'm saying, what psychologists are saying, is self-awareness is key in relationships, and your job is to deal with your stuff, not other people's. Your job is to deal with your stuff, not other people's. As Kacey Musgraves, the country singer, says, own your own crazy, mind your own biscuits, and life will be gravy. Sometimes I sing that, but I wasn't quite up to it today. Now, Jesus is also not saying that you will be judged by God the way you judge others, because the Bible tells us that we're judged according to our relationship with Jesus. So once I know Jesus, I'm not under God's judgment. What I believe he's telling me is that when I judge others, I believe that's what I will get back. And it is what I will get back. The most unhappy people I know are critical people who are finding fault with everyone around them, because really, that's the critic that's inside their own head. Does anyone relate to that? Have you ever been the worst mom at the playdate? You know what I'm saying? Like, your kid was the one that bit someone or threw sand or just had the meltdown where you had to pick them up and leave like this. You don't even say goodbye. You just pick them up and you walk out. If you haven't been the worst mom at the playdate yet, your time is coming. There will be a day that your child does something that you feel embarrassed about. And if you were the one on the bench that went, well, I don't know if we want to play with Johnny anymore, he has emotional disturbance problems, then that's what you believe people are thinking about you. When we are judging other people's appearances very harshly, we think everybody's looking at us like that. And they will. Ultimately, we give grace, we get it. We give criticism and judgment, we get it back. Now, I am not saying that we should not have good judgment and discernment in the people that we choose for our friends, because the Bible says, walk with the wise and become wise, and associate with fools and get into trouble. And that is what you will teach your children as they enter elementary school. Like, don't hang out with the kids that are going to get you into trouble. And that's true for us as adults, too. So here's what I say, and that is the key to knowing the difference between being judgmental or overly critical and using good judgment is look for the fruit of wisdom in your friends' lives. That's a blank on your outline. The fruit of wisdom. Do you generally believe that your friend makes wise choices? The Bible talks about fools are people who see trouble and keep walking right into it, keep making the same mistakes over and over again. If you have a friend who always is in crisis and chaos, maybe she's the common denominator, or maybe you're the person always in crisis and chaos, and maybe you are. So I'm not saying to not make good judgments, but only to be a little bit more careful about the competition and comparison that women do to one another. Can I get an amen on that? Freedom from the plank versus spec dilemma, I think, is found in this challenge, that we must avoid competition and comparison, and instead, can we see each other as teachers and encouragers? Can we look at people who are different than us and see that they might have something to teach us rather than feel the need to compare and compete? I have a little story for you. It's about a friend. I'm going to call her Jane. It's not her real name, but the J thing's working for me. So my friend Jane, I used to call her my friend who's always pregnant, but now she's my friend with five kids. She had her fourth pregnancy was twins, and her oldest was only 7 at the time. So Jane used to say that she does not cook, she prepares food. So she goes to Trader Joe's and buys frozen things and warms them. She's just not a cooker, and that's fine. You know, with five kids, who would be? Really, I mean, maybe I wouldn't be. I have two, and I can barely do it. But I do love to cook. I love to sew. I'm a little bit of a domestic, you know, and I have a lot of energy. I'm not very good at stillness, so I like to cook. And so one night, Jane called me just as I was serving dinner to my family, and I had set up, served them dinner, and I was feeling really good about myself. And I said, guess what? I just made homemade tortellini soup with organic Swiss chard from the farmer's market for dinner. And I was all happy because I didn't know what I was going to cook. And I'd pulled it out of the refrigerator and just felt great about it. I forgot that she's a little sensitive about the fact that I cook and she prepares food. And she goes, great, my kids got frozen pizza and mango. I'm like, well, that's good too. So as we start our conversation, I'll come back to why we were talking later. Everyone at the table, my husband and my two kids, are all doing this like waiter, like they need something. And I'm like, you guys know how to find the Parmesan cheese in the fridge or whatever. And there's the other adult that lives with you, your dad. I have to say, that's not better yet. My kids are 10 and 14. I could be on the phone on the toilet and they'll still come get me rather than their dad. So yeah, I'm like, your dad's right there. Whatever you need, he can handle it. But my seven-year-old goes, there's a bug in my soup. And I go, okay. I look, there's a little gnat indeed in her soup. I pick it out. I say, it's protein. It's fine. I throw it in the trash. Go ahead. You're okay. I walk in the other room, I finish my conversation, and I come back. And domestic goddess that I am, I see that there is a problem at the heart of my home, my kitchen table. My husband is eating like this. My four-year-old is just shoveling. She's fine. But my seven-year-old is crying. I can't eat this. There's too many bugs in it. And I look at my bowl and I say, honey, this cracked pepper. It's fresh ground pepper like your mommy always puts in everything. And my husband leans across the table and says, the pepper has legs. I look in the soup. The thing about organic Swiss chard from the farmer's market, you gotta wash it really well. There were like dozens of tiny bugs in the soup. And the killer is that my four-year-old, who won't eat something as exotic as oregano, is like, I like it. I just picked the bugs out. And my husband is also still eating it and apparently doesn't have the authority to tell the crying seven-year-old that she doesn't have to. So as Jeff drives off to Carl's Jr. to save the day, I call Jane back and I say, darling, your kids got frozen pizza, but I force-fed my family bugs. Also, my marriage is obviously, I'm so scary that my husband makes them eat bugs and eats them himself. I got back from MomCon after telling that story. My best friend went with me. She goes, why did he do that? I'm like, I don't know. I went home and I asked him. He goes, I don't know, bugs, not a big deal. So I'm not that scary. So here's the thing. Wasn't that lovely that I called her back and just told her, you know what, honey, I'm not so great. I feed the kids bugs. That's a silly example. But really, Jane and I were very different. We're just very different people. And we were drawn to each other by those different qualities. But it's very easy for the things that the opposites attract to actually start to make you not get along or resent each other or wonder if what you're doing is okay, if someone else is doing it differently. And what I learned in that relationship is we had something to teach each other. She doesn't cook, but she's so good to get on the floor and look her kids in the eye. And when I spent time with her, I was a more present mother. I learned how to be a more present mother by being with her. And I taught her actually how to cook. I taught her how to make cupcakes. And then she decided that that was okay. I could just make all her kids' cupcakes from now on. But we did teach each other things. I'm part of a 12-step program for codependency, and I knew I needed it after one of my relationships broke up. And codependency just means that I am confused about boundaries, about where you stop and I start, and I think if you don't need me, you don't love me. Back to that fixer-fixy thing. So, like, I'm here to help you, and if you don't need my help, I don't know what to do. And it's been a great program. If anybody has questions, I would love to answer. But what I love in 12-step programs is you have this thing called a sponsor. And what the literature says is if you see something in someone that you want, ask them to be your sponsor. And I love that because I think in our world what we do is I see something in someone that I want, and I don't want to get near her because she makes me feel bad about myself. She's too pretty, too organized, too fit, too knows what she's doing too. It's overwhelming to me. I only want to be with you if you can tell me what's wrong with you. And that's true in the long run. I do want to know what's wrong with you because I want you to be authentic. But what if the thing you see in someone, she can encourage you and teach you how to have that thing? If God is willing that you should have that thing, can we teach and encourage each other to have the things in our character that's lacking? Can we do that instead of compete and compare? The Bible says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man or woman sharpens another. And that's an act of friction, of conflict sometimes, that we become sharper and better by being with people who are different than us. And I love that because I think MOPS is about that. If we put all the sleep training women over here and all the kangaroo care over here, we put the breastfeeding and the homeschool and the MOPS would not work. But we need to be with people who see things differently, do things differently, have different strengths and weaknesses than we do. Last point about safe, sane friends is that they are able to both give and take from the relationship. How many of you really feel, by a show of hands, it's easier for you to give than take? It's easier to help someone than ask for help. That's pretty common. Most women will say that. How many of you really would rather take? Yes, never more than one person raises their hand ever, and I do this talk at least once a month. I'm going to tell you why being a taker is such a good thing. I only want to ask for help if I know the day and time I can pay you back. That's kind of in my natural flesh, that's what I would do. I don't want to owe you anything. I'm uncomfortable with it. But there's a great book that many of this talk is based on. It's called Safe People by Drs. Cloud and Townsend. Safe People. They also wrote the famous book Boundaries. And they say that the number one thing about an unsafe person is that they won't admit that they need anything from you. They have it all together, and they don't need any help. Now, we might think that we're being strong and wonderful by helping other people and not asking for help, but here's what actually happens, Cloud and Townsend say, in that relationship. People start thinking that you don't need them, and they don't really like being someone who has nothing to offer, and then the competition and comparison thing rears its ugly head, and they kind of want to see you taken down in the long run. Intimacy is built on shared weaknesses, so we don't get to have safe relationships where one of us is together and the other one isn't. Pretending that you have it all together makes other people feel that they are falling apart. That's on your outline. My best friend, Jen, we met when we were newlyweds in a small group Bible study, and 10 years ago, her husband had an affair, and it was obviously horrible. I mean, we met them in church. We were couple friends with them, and it took her a long time to admit to me that it was going on, even because she was so upset, obviously. And it went on for over a year, and we walked through that together about what she was going to do and what the appropriate thing to do was in that situation. And she had two sons, and we called her husband the dirtbag. In text, it was DB. That's what we called him. So her kids wouldn't know who we were talking about. We called him some other things, too, but that was the PG name we had. And I did not share a lot of what was going on, what I needed help with in my life at that point. I was just there for her for like a year. I definitely didn't talk to her about my marriage, which I think was right. But I didn't call her really about anything. I was just there for her. And then one day I got in a terrible argument over the phone with a family member. And I was kind of in hysterics, and I called her crying. And she said, "I'll come over right now." I'm like, "You don't have to. You're too far away. It's rush hour traffic. But just, I want to talk about it." Poured it all out to her. She checked on me for days, called, prayed for me. It was a big issue that happened in our family. And then a few weeks later, she called and she said, "I need to say thank you." I'm like, "For what?" She said, "I was starting to think that I was too broken for you to help you. Thank you for asking me for help. Thank you for telling me. I thought you thought I had nothing left to give you." I had no idea that that's how she was feeling. That's not what I thought was going on. I was just trying to be helpful. And I unconsciously gave her that message. I blame the dirtbag. I don't think it was her fault. If you are always the one that will watch everybody's kids or drive them home from preschool, but you don't let your friends do it for you, maybe you're unconsciously giving the message, "I don't trust you with my kids." Now, if you don't trust them with your kids, don't have them drive. That's fine. But people generally want to feel that they have something to offer. We want to have something to offer. So you're actually blessing and honoring someone when you ask them for help. You really are. You're saying, "I trust you. And we all want to be trusted. As I close, I want to talk about two more things. First is that sometimes our issues are not our personality flaws, our impatience, our fears, but there are circumstances. Sometimes our friends just go through bad times. And Proverbs says, a friend is always loyal and a brother is born to help in a time of need. You have little children, you walk slowly sometimes when you're a good mom and they see things on the ground, right? They see snails and rocks and things you're not that interested in, but you slow down to hold their hand sometimes. And that's what being a good friend looks like sometimes too, is we slow down to be with people who are going through something difficult. And this is where a network of safe, sane friends is good, because if you're going through something tough with one friend, it's good to have other people to encourage you. I want to go back to the bug soup for a minute. Jane, the reason she was calling me was because that day she had taken her son to the oncologist. When her firstborn was less than 2 years old, she was changing his diaper on a Sunday night, and she thought he had a hernia. She called me, something's wrong. This is probably a hernia. Take him to the pediatrician. By Thursday night, we were in Children's Hospital of Orange County, and her son was undergoing surgery, and I was with her when the surgeon came out and said, your son has testicular cancer. And it was just the worst moment I've ever experienced. She was pregnant, of course, with her second child. And we walked through a season together where she was saying, you know, Lord, don't take that baby and give me this one back. That won't work. This is not going to replace that baby. I want to keep my son. I want to keep my son. And it was a really dark time. It was really sad. And that's one of the greatest risks we have in authentic relationships, is that we feel pain with others too. And that's really difficult. But the wonderful news is that the night of the bug soup was Grayson's 1 year cancer-free call to the doctor. And I needed to be on the phone to hear that, because I had walked through the dark part. And I want to hear the good stuff. And I want to encourage you too. It's okay to put your kids in front of the DVD or not be there for something, to be there for a friend, or you will come out of early childhood alone. That is all right. But that was important to get that. And I celebrate that boy's birthday. He just turned 10. Because I know what happened when he was little. And my friend Jen, married to the dirtbag, her husband heard a sermon that made him realize, oh my gosh, I'm the bad guy in the Bible. I'm the one that God's mad at in these stories. I'm not the hero of my life anymore. And he joined a recovery program for men with intimacy issues. He broke it off with the girl. My friend made him move out of the house, but they restored their marriage, and they just celebrated 22 years of marriage. And that's a miracle. You hardly ever hear that story, and I'm so glad I was part of it. It was so worth sitting through that. And the dirtbag, David, paid her way to fly to MomCon with me so I could tell his story in front of 1,200 women because he's that sincerely repentant and that... Sorry. And that grateful to still be married to my best friend, that she forgave him and that they restored their marriage, is one of my favorite friend stories ever that I've walked through with her. The Message version of 1 Peter 4:8 says, love each other as if your life depended on it. And I think that's true. I think having women who love us and walk with us through the good stuff and the bad stuff, our life depends on it. I think we need our teachers and encouragers and our safe, sane women around us to get us through this stage and more. And I hope that I've encouraged you a little bit today to be braver about sharing who you really are and take a next step in a friendship. But I also know that in a room this size, there are women who are struggling in a relationship where you're really wondering, is this good, healthy, safe, toxic? What do I do? Or also really struggling with loneliness. And I want to ask you, and I know it's uncomfortable, to just close your eyes for me right now, all of you. And if you are in that place where you just really need some wisdom about a relationship, or you're just really feeling lonely right now and unknown, would you just raise your hand? Everyone's eyes are closed, because I would love to pray for you before I go. Father, thank you. Thank you. Thank you that what you want for us is relationships, and it's your will for us to know you and know others and be known and loved for who we are. I thank you that in James it says that any of us who ask for wisdom, you will give generously to us without finding fault. So I ask for wisdom and discernment over our relationships, Lord. For those of us in the room that are thinking, I don't know what to do about this one relationship. I don't know if I am safe there. I don't know if I am being safe there. Would you give us wisdom to discern well who we should allow to walk closely with us in our lives, Lord, because it matters to you. And for those in this room that might be struggling with loneliness, this can be such an isolating time of life. I ask just for the great gift of someone to walk into their life, that they would become more known, that they would have patience for the long-term process that is making a real friend. And I thank you for MOPS, and for this room specifically, this is a place where we come to be safe, to have great relationships in our flawed, beautiful selves. And I thank you for this room. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, ladies.